This is Comics Coast to Coast.
Hey everybody, this is Brian Dunaway, and you're listening to Comics Coast to Coast, episode 214, The Howard Porter Interview, part one of many, I hope. But before we introduce Howard, let's introduce my co-host, Joel Duggan of Starcrossed Online. Joel Duggan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, man.
Great. You know, man, it's been a busy week, but we'll talk more about that very shortly when we talk about cons with Howard Porter. But first, before we do that, we have a very special guest host. I first want to say I miss Matthew Ducharme. He's not here this week. Don't worry. He shall return in his place. Stephen Slyker of Major Spoilers.
Hello.
Stephen.
How are you guys? Thanks for inviting me on.
Right. How do we get this crossover thing going?
I don't know, but it's pretty cool. I think there's this little vector point somewhere in the Utah Valley called Nerdtacular.
Where comic dorks meet comics coast to coast. And
exactly.
World, there's the what is it called? Not the equilibrium. It's the
equator? No, that's
no.
Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone. The Bermuda Triangle of comic podcasts.
That's it. I lost my plane in the Bermuda Triangle, and here I am now. Stephen Slyker, you do Major Spoilers.
That's right.
Which is a show that is, where you're on the Frog Pants Network, right? It was kind of like, we're on there.
Yeah, we've got a couple of shows on Frog Pants. We've got Critical Hit, which is a Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
Love that.
And then we've also got Munchkin Land, which is a game all about playing Munchkin and other tabletop games.
Do you know who we talked to last week?
It probably wasn't Steve Jackson Games.
No, it was, might as well have been. It was John Kovalik.
Oh, cool.
Right?
When does that interview come out?
It's coming out before this one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you'll hear it. It should be in stores first thing in the morning. But before we talk about that, let's hop on over to Howard Porter, who I had the pleasure of meeting just a few months ago for the first time at Nerdtacular with Stephen Slyker and Joel Duggan and Matthew Ducharme. I can't believe you're here, man. Howard Porter, how are you doing?
Hey, thanks. I'm doing well. It's great to hear you guys again.
Right. We were on a panel together. And for those who don't know who Howard Porter is, Howard, tell the nice people all about yourself, please.
I'm a comic book artist. I worked for DC since about 1993.
Right. Ooh, that rhymes. Good job.
yes. And on and off, I've drawn had some ups and downs throughout my career, but I'm currently drawing for them as well.
I'm so excited. Yes, you have had some ups and downs. Sometimes we have interviews and it's like, oh, what am I going to ask this person? Because they don't really reveal any of their personal life at all. And so you can just basically ask them about their characters. But, you know, you're kind of open somewhat. I don't know how open you're going to be with some of the tribulations you've had in your life, but you're certainly open with it on your website. So I'm hoping that you can at least tell us that much.
I'm going to be too open until we're all uncomfortable.
Right?
Oh my God, that Howard Porter. He told us too much information.
Now, Howard, this most recent thing you're doing, let's just jump right into it, because you're doing Justice League 3000.
That is correct.
And that is, what is that, like on issue 10, 11, something like that, out in stores now?
10 should be coming out in the next couple weeks. I'm not sure the actual date. But yeah, and unfortunately, I'm only an issue or two ahead of that. So.
Oh, wow. So you're cutting it close.
Yeah, is that pretty normal? I mean, what's normal for you to work 4 months out, 6 months out, two months out?
Yeah, if you have 3 issues done ahead, then you're in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. 4 issues would be fantastic. But right. Doesn't really happen too often.
5 issues and you can see into the future.
Yeah, right.
You can do that. Nobody.
Yeah.
So you can go to howardporter.net and you can take a look at least up till episode or issue 9 of Justice League 3000. You have some colors in there and some black and whites.
Yes.
They are beautiful. I'm showing... Nope.
No words, though.
No words. Yeah, you can't. What is that? I was going to ask you about that. What's their policy over at DC about what you can and can't show? Because you've got quite a few panels on there, but I'm assuming since the words aren't there, it's okay.
I don't really know what their policy is. However, you can that people you once the books come out, you can sell your art. So, like on eBay, you'll find people's art, and so I figure it's safe to put it up there because they've come out.
That's not something that I knew. So you can sell your original artwork that you did for the comic on eBay. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, a lot of people sell on eBay or have a dealer.
Right.
I
thought those people were just special and they worked out some kind of awesome deal with DC or something. So is that kind of standard contract fare thing there?
Yeah, it's standard. Generally, you have a penciler and an inker, and they split the art returns. I'm not sure what it is, 60-40 or 70-30 or something.
Right.
I'm doing all the art myself, so I have it all.
Right. So are you gonna throw it up there on eBay like Eastman did with his first drawing of the turtles?
I saw that. How much did it go for?
Like $2 million, whatever.
Wow.
Right? The first drawing of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that he drew ever from like 1984, he threw up on eBay and went for like $2 million. That is
wow. Wow.
Talk about striking when the iron is hot.
Yeah, that's it's crazy to me just because I can't fathom just spending that kind of money on something. But also really cool that comic art is pulling in that kind of money.
Yeah, that kind of change.
You know, because I mean, it's not even a book. Like it's a drawing.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes though that drawing is what people want. I mean, with Howard, I mean, people are probably trying to find old JLA stuff that you did years ago, as well as the new stuff that you're doing, because if it's got Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman or Green Lantern in it, man, those pages can go for a lot of money.
Sure.
You know, even some of the lesser characters. You know, you used to work, I think you did almost the entire run of The Ray, which was one of my favorite series from back in the day.
Ray.
I can just imagine that selling those is kind of an extra benefit for not having all of the, you know, it's not a full-time job. It's not a weekly job. You know, you're not under a monthly contract with comic book publishers. So this is this added bonus that you get to sell your artwork.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a big community that collects it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so. wouldn't the music industry just have like a crap in their pants if they allowed the musicians to like sell their, I don't know.
Oh, their masters?
Their masters or something.
Oh, yeah.
They'd totally poop their pants.
I'd like a nice Jimi Hendrix 8-track reel.
Right? Ain't going to happen, though, but it sure would be nice. Now, Slyker, to back up a little bit like you had just said, you said The Ray was like one of your favorites back in the day.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't read much of The Ray. I didn't really realize how awesome it was until I started researching. After we met Howard at Nerdtacular, I was like, wait a minute, The Ray, I know that, but I didn't really read it.
Yeah, sadly, I got in like issue, I don't know, 14 or something like that. Right. And I was like, oh, this is a great character. And it's like, oh, this series is going to be ending soon. And so then I had to go back and try to find the back issues, which back then you didn't have the internet. You couldn't find comics as easily as you can now. So
right now, see, that was your first gig, Howard. Was that the first thing you did, was some inking you did for The Ray?
No, I drew it, but yeah, basically I penciled it. It was basically the first thing, and there was a couple issues of that were really poorly drawn by myself that game before that, and I won't mention them. But yeah, that was the first ongoing thing I did.
Well, so how did you get that? How did you land that job with DC and The Ray?
Okay, DC and The Ray.
DC and The Ray. It's a song. I just know it is.
It is now. I had I've been assisting inkers and my who live locally to me doing backgrounds for a good 5 or 6 years.
Wow, man.
And I put together my samples, and one of the guys was nice enough to take me into the offices, DC offices at the time. And this is before the internet, before you could email them stuff in. And I left my sample, my portfolio packet on a bunch of desks and got some good feedback and left and didn't hear back anything for a while. I was about to get married.
Woo-hoo.
And I said, I cannot be just I can't be married and be an inking assistant and making $10 here and there.
Right.
So I was going to give up on everything. And I actually got a call from an editor, I think it was the day before I got married, said, would you like to do this issue, fill an issue? It needs to be done quick.
Right.
And I said, I'm getting married tomorrow. And and he's like, oh, okay, well, then maybe something else in the future. And I'm like, no, give it to me. So so I took the assignment, and I think a book was Dark Stars. And
cool.
And I brought the work with me on our honeymoon.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I worked every day.
Oh, my gosh. So the wedding present from your wife was patience.
Yeah, she totally. I'm very lucky. She totally understood.
That is great. So did so that wasn't a problem for her. So that wow, y'all are still together, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, see, that's amazing.
Yep, 21 years.
21.
Wow, congratulations.
Years.
Thanks.
Yeah, congratulations to her too. Good job. Wow. So you just said yeah, no marriage, whatever.
I still did that. Yeah.
I will ink this as well. Now you
yep.
you went to a college at Pear College. Is that how you pronounce it? Pear?
Yeah, like the fruit.
Right, right. And that's in that's in what is it, the home of the sleeping giant, I think I read it was. That made me curious. Do you know the story behind that?
I actually don't. It's just a mountain in New right. Haven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shucks. I thought it was gonna be superhero related. Oh man.
Nothing that exciting.
Now the Ray, like I said, I wasn't really familiar with that, but you you worked well, before I get to that, let's talk just real quick because Frank McLaughlin, who I'm assuming was an instructor at the time at Pear College.
Yes.
You know, he's done things as well. And so he kind of took you under his tutelage and you did some inking for him?
Right. Yeah, that my first year of college there, so 1987, I did some drawings while in class and hung them around. They were like goofy, I don't know, werewolves or whatever.
Right.
Hung them around the campus, and somebody gave them one of the drawings to Frank McLaughlin, who was teaching there, who I didn't know at the time. And that's who I started to be his assistant, and right. through him, other four or five other guys. Yeah. Well, what was the question? Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No, I was just mostly just wanting to hear that story, and you answered it perfectly because Frank McLaughlin is he's done, was it Gilthorpe, I believe, in the yeah. comic. So I mean, he does that's a comic strip for those who don't know, and I think it still runs too. He's in his 70s now, right?
Yeah, I just saw him at the still doing it.
Yeah, you saw him at the Comic Con.
Yeah, at the convention I did a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Did he recognize you immediately and say, oh, Howard?
Yes. Howard, you're twice the size you used to be.
So just out of curiosity, as an inking assistant, like what were your duties when you were working for Frank?
You start out just basically ruling with rapidographs, kind of ruling buildings and whatnot. But then you work up to doing pretty much everything except for the big figures in the panels.
Right.
They'll do that.
Then he smacks your hand and says, no, hands off. I got this.
Yeah.
I am the master.
Yes. Leave the fun stuff for me.
So that brings up the next question I was going to ask, which was you did inking in the beginning, and then you kind of crossed over to penciling. And so I'm just curious. I'm not super knowledgeable about the inside workings of the comic book industry. I know a lot about the syndicated comics and that, but I don't know a lot about the the comic book area. So I got to ask, who's higher on the food chain?
We are all equal. Right.
We are all equal. Penciler or inker? Who gets the most respect? Right?
The writer
gets the most respect.
Yes.
I thought it would have been the cover artist.
Oh,
that's the guy. That's the guy. No, inside the industry, no, screw him. Outside the industry, we're all like, ooh, cover art. Sweet.
I don't know. I certainly respect inkers.
Right. Oh, I didn't ask who you respected. I said he was higher.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on what he's doing on what issue, right? If he's an inker, then it's the inkers. And if he's penciling, then it's the pencilers. Right.
Slyker, what's your take on that? Who's more important as a consumer? Who do you really go to?
I think it depends on what you're into. I mean, if you're really into following an artist, like Howard or Terry Dodson or Adam Hughes or whoever, I mean, then a lot of times you may just buy it for their art. But I mean, Howard's worked with some, holy crap, you've worked with Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, Jed Winnick, Jeff Johns. I mean, people would just poop themselves to work with them, just one of them. And you've done all four, and that's pretty cool. And, you know, I think this combo together is one of those things that you want to pick up and definitely read regardless. And especially, Howard, with your run on JLA with Grant Morrison, that had to be very interesting.
It was a lot of pressure. It was interesting. It was, we didn't know it was going to turn out the way it did, and very happy it did take off. At that point, I don't think was Grant really that he, that was his big thing that kind of pushed
that
him
probably pushed him into the spotlight. But I mean, yeah. He had done some stuff, you know, before over in England. Yeah. I don't know if that was his first U.S. work or not, but
I think
certainly
he
was known in
Animal
Europe.
Man,
yeah, definitely Animal Man before that. Yeah. How did you two get paired up?
That was just luck, really. Right. The editor that was editing the Ray, and I did a crossover before that, a couple of crossovers through that same editor. He just it was a young editor, and he got the proposal from Grant. I think the original one might have been for Teen Titans. Mm. And they said we didn't want to do a Teen Titans thing. Can you make it into Justice League? And so Grant did, and this is how I'm remembering it anyway.
Right.
And they said you can have the main characters for the first story arc, I think. And it took off like wildfire, and we ended up being able to keep them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So.
JLA was one of my favorites, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, how did that work? Because he was still over in Europe, and you were in the U.S. How did you two collaborate and work? I mean, especially with at least 6 hours difference between where you were and where he was.
I barely spoke. Unfortunately, got to speak to him. You know, I hung out a couple of times in San Diego or when he came into New York, but we didn't really speak all that much. Right. Because of the time difference and everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. Think that would be different now if you had Skype and that type of thing? Do you think it would, or it would still have been pretty much the same operation?
Right. If I was to work with him, probably I wouldn't get to speak with me so big and right. busy. But
I don't have time to talk to Howard Porter.
But yeah, I would hope so, because things tend to come out the best when you have when you can speak to the writer and have a nice back and forth going on.
Are you getting to do that now with your current writers? Are you getting to communicate a little bit more? Are y'all kind of working in the same area?
Yeah, I am. So if I can write out the rest of my career working with the guy I'm working with now, I would be so happy. I speak to him at least once a week.
Oh, that's
it's Keith Giffen. He he's just a great guy and a great writer, and he's a partially responsible for Rocket Raccoon and the Guardians.
Oh, people are loving that right now. I'm telling you.
So how much
Groot was huge at Dragon Con, by the way? How about Comic Con? Was it Groot all the time?
I think I saw one Groot.
Oh, really?
And a couple of Rocket Raccoons.
Oh, we had tons of them over at Dragon Con. Go ahead, Joel. You were asking a question.
Well, I was just about to ask Howard, like when you have a relationship like that with your writer, do you get some say in where the story goes? Does he call you or email you with like, hey, I'm stuck. Like, do you have any ideas on how to get, you know, Batman out of this situation or anything like that?
He is just a fountain of ideas. It's insane. So he generally knows where he wants to go before we speak. But, you know, the last cover I did, he's like, just draw these two characters on it and have them doing something, and then I'll write the story around it.
So
that was pretty cool.
How does that collaboration work? Do you wait? I mean, in this particular issue, it was quite a bit different, where he's writing the story around it. But do you get a full fleshed out script from your writer? And I guess I'm talking from the DC side, because Marvel does things a little bit different. But do you get the full fleshed out script, and then you write, then you draw to that, and then send faxes back and forth, or how does that work?
Faxes.
Right.
well, you know.
Why not, Stephen?
Why not?
On JLA,
That's my favorite question yet. Go ahead, answer that, Howard.
I would say 99% of the time it's been full script, like you would see for a play or a TV show, right, or a movie. But on this series, Keith is writing it. He's doing thumbnails for the pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of like real simple Jack Kirby kind of drawings. And yeah, it's totally done. There's no dialogue. There's some notes in there. I'll draw the page from there, and then Jam DeMatteis then dialogues from the art.
Very cool.
That's fun. I like that idea. I love the fact that you got to do a cover that just... How often do you get to do the cover? Is that pretty common?
Yeah, I've been doing all the covers on this series.
That's great. You know what I love? I love a comic that has same art on the cover as they do inside.
Me too.
And and something that actually happens in the story.
Right, exactly. That's even better.
Yeah. I'm just realizing you've done both the pencils and the inks for Justice League 3000, right?
Yes.
Awesome. So, I mean, are you inking everything, or is there some cases where you're just, you know, you're scanning really dark pencils or anything like that for a softer look? Because as I was reading it, I was wondering, because I realized like how seeing your pencils and then seeing the inks was like, you know, I had to go back and check the credits because like he's absolutely doing both.
Right. Yeah. I kind of developed a different process. It is, I do type pencils, scan them in, right, darken them, and then ink them in Photoshop and add like gray tones and stuff.
Right.
It's not the traditional way.
Is that go ahead.
Sorry. So you're no longer inking on paper then?
Sometimes I'll pick up a pen and put it to the paper, but it's mostly just pencil.
Wow. Right. So do you find that, is it a faster process now that you're a penciler and inker?
It's not very fast, no.
No, it's not. There's nothing fast about my process.
It should be,
all.
But it is.
No. Well, it's funny how you slow down when you're going digital. It's, for whatever reason, it's like you get to, I find you're happier with the end result, but it still takes you just as long.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because you can tweak throughout the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So does DC now just only want to accept electronic versions of their pages, or are there still a lot of people submitting pages that need to be, you know, scanned in?
Yeah, who's the old fuddy-duddy around there who's
mailing
in, you know, FedExing it in?
Yeah.
Faxing
it in. Yeah, it's mostly digital, I think. I haven't turned in paper for a long while.
Right.
Even pencilers now scan their pencils in and email them to the inkers. They'll get it printed out in blue line and ink.
Right.
And then that way, so.
I wonder how heartbroken the UPS and FedEx guys are now that the comic industry doesn't send their stuff through there. You know, it has to be a little bit sad.
I don't miss those days.
I bet you don't.
Oh, geez. You're trying to make the FedEx deadline? Yeah, I don't imagine that would be very fun at all.
No.
You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, selling original art, and hearing that, you know, pencilers will scan and then send to an inker, and then the inker can print it off and ink an original on Bristol after printing it off. Like, that's really cool, because then you both have original art to sell.
Yeah, and which one as a collector do you want?
Right. That's a good opposed to the pencils that just, I mean, in you know, in a traditional, you know, sense, mm-hmm, of inking right on top of the pencils, where the pencils just no longer exist, you know, save for underneath, you know, the inks. That's really cool.
Yeah.
What do you prefer, Stephen? Which do you prefer to get when you're collecting?
I like inked. I liked final inked. I just, for some reason, even though I like to see sometimes the fine pencil work that goes into it before it gets inked.
Right.
I still like the ink because it just stands out a lot more.
Like it.
And I've collected a lot of pages over the years. So I've kind of got more inked than non-ink stuff.
Right.
Do you ever have a combo of both? Like, do you ever get the pencils and the inks for the same page?
I think, no, not on the same page, but I think I have some stuff from Popmon where I've got one page that was inked and one page that wasn't.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Because if I had my, you know, my choice. I'd love to have, you know, like a penciled version and then an inked version of the same page, just because the art nerd in me would want to see all the energy and you know, gesture and anatomy that goes into the sketches. But I started off in the industry as a cleanup artist for animation, so inking is always where my heart is in terms of, like, you know, my true love.
Not to get sidetracked, but guess who I ran into this weekend at Dragon Con? When you started talking.
Spider-Man?
No, I wish. I ran into
several
million of them. For some reason, Deadpool is huge right now.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. But I ran into Bob Camp and his wife. I got a chance to sit down and talk with them for a little bit. And Bob Camp did he did a little bit of co-directing with John Kay, I believe, for Ren and Stimpy. And then he went on and carried on after Nickelodeon let John Kay go and said, nope, you can't have this. Go away.
Interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm. But he's a super nice guy. I really enjoyed it. He was selling a lot of his original work there. And I was doing the same thing. I was like, oh, inks or pencils? Inks or pencils? And I'd pick them up and they're like, okay, both of them. And he said, you picked those up? I said, yeah. He said, you bought them. I'm like, fine. All right.
Well,
so,
cool. Well, Howard, you were talking about hitting that FedEx deadline. When do you work best? Are you a get up first thing in the morning, crack of dawn, and sit down? Or are you a late night person when you're doing your work?
I've done it always, but currently I get up about 8 o'clock and work till about 6 when my wife comes home, and then might hit a couple more hours later on in the evening.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like banker hours. What do you? So segue right into the bankers. You stopped for a little while doing the comics.
Yeah,
and you had gotten a job as a banker. So was that kind of more of that? You know, I've got a family to support, or what happened there?
That was right at the end of the Justice League run. I was not having fun, and there was too much pressure, and wasn't happy with the work I was doing. And my friend said, hey, there's an opening for a graphic designer where I work at in New York. And I applied and got that job. Took a break from comics for about, I think, 2.5 years.
Right. Well, good. So you weren't working as a teller or nothing. You weren't servicing ATM machines or something. You were still in the art field. It was just
sort of.
Yeah.
It was, you know, making little icons for applications but learning Photoshop, which came in handy. So.
Well, that's good.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I love that.
So what then eventually drew you back in? Was it a phone call from somebody saying, "Hey, we want you back. You're moving up to the big leagues, kid."
I'd kept in contact with some editors and stuff in the interim. But what came back is 9/11 happened. And I didn't really want to be in the city. And layoffs were happening. And the economy was not so hot. And it hit. It was an investment bank. So it hit that pretty hard. So eventually layoffs came around. I said, hey, pick me. I want to go draw again.
I want to get out of this crazy money business. I was working for Charles Schwab as I was doing a little bit of design work myself at the time for programming. And the same thing. It was, it was 2011, 9/11 just happened. Did I say 2011, 2001? And it was just a weird time. It was like, I want to get out of this. I want to get back home.
Yeah.
So I was in Phoenix at the time, and we ran back to South Carolina. Said nope, not doing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nope. So that's good. So, but you okay? So when you left, you were doing DC stuff. But when you first came back in, did you jump? You came back in with Marvel, right?
Wow, you are good.
I am on. I'm like I'm. I read stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. My buddy, my best friend he's an artist, Ron Garney. Been working for Marvel for years. He took me to a Marvel Christmas party I met the fellow who's, I think he was assistant editing for the Fantastic Four book. And I said, hey, I'd like to draw something. And he's like, give me a call on Monday. And I got to do, that's my favorite book of all time is Fantastic Four. So I got to do 6 issues with Mark Waid on that, and that was a lot of fun.
That does sound like fun. That was always one of my favorite. When in the Marvel side, I was big into Fantastic Four. On DC side, I was big into JLA. So you're hitting all the right spots for me.
Nice.
Now, you when you went to Marvel, you've been working at DC, I guess, about 6 years before you switched over to banking.
Yeah,
somewhere around
something
there,
something like that.
And so, what's that culture like? That culture change. I'm sure it's changed since then. But what kind of culture shock did you have from going from Marvel to DC? Was it? It's like these guys do it totally different.
You know, I thought there was going to be a whole different approach or something, but it's exactly the same.
Is it really the same?
Yeah.
So it'd be like working at McDonald's for 6 years and then maybe stepping out for a little while, working at a movie theater, and then coming back and working for Burger King, and you find out that the clown does it the same as the king. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Yeah. Very similar. It might have been, I when I came back, I worked with a writer I had worked with previously, so that helped.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Well, now, you didn't stay at Marvel too long before you went back over to your good friends at DC and started what you're doing now.
Yeah, I did The Flash after Fantastic Four.
Right. So you did, when did the Underworld Unleash series? That was before you went banking, right?
Yeah, that was right before JLA.
Right, that was after the Ray and right before you went banking.
Yep.
And so that would have been the first time you got to work on big brand characters like The Flash.
I tell you, boy, that project nearly killed me. I had to do 2 pages a day. I was working.
Wow.
I would work 8 hours and take a nap for a couple of hours and work another 8 hours. And
right.
And it had just everybody. All the villains were in there. And
oh, yes.
That nearly killed me.
So Neron, is that how you say his name? The bad,
yeah.
The demon? Yeah, Neron.
Yeah.
So did you have to make any deals with him to get in on that project? Did you have to swap one soul for one magic pencil?
Had to go down to the crossroads.
That was the introduction of that crazy green, neon green color, right, into comics?
Yeah, that was the gimmick.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that. Now, unfortunately, Superman was off-world at the time. So were you kind of slightly disappointed that you wouldn't get a chance to work on Superman just yet during that time?
I was supposed to get Superman after JLA, but
right.
that didn't work out. So yeah,
then I make you sad, stupid Superman. All right, so
he's eluded me all this time.
Not for much longer. Now, somewhere in between all this action that's been going on and this wonderful career you've had. You had an accident with your arm, was your hand, right?
Yeah, my hand.
Are you a southpaw or are you right-handed?
I am right-handed.
Right-handed. And so what kind of accident are we talking about? Because you didn't really go into the details. Was it repetitive stress or did you punch a wall because you thought you were a superhero? What happened?
I have punched walls, but not on purpose. It was my buddy was over and we were going to make a nice. Yep.
This is how they all start, man. My buddy was over.
Can you crush this with your hand?
Right.
And we were going to have a nice steak dinner and I was making a martini. And,
right.
And it was a glass shaker. And put the stuff in there and put the top on and the shaker broke and my hand came down on it and it
right.
severed the tendon and
nerve
in my thumb.
Wow.
So
had to have been a lot of rehab then.
Right.
It didn't really hurt. There's no pain. It just, I got.
Look at that.
Yeah. It looked like Pac-Man's mouth opening. Mm. It just, my future just washed over me. Right. They could see, oh, this is not good. I'm probably not going to be able to draw. And I had to have surgery. And they tried to reattach the nerve, which didn't quite work out. Mm. And went through rehab, and and things weren't really coming back so well. And I said to the therapist, "Is this as good as it's going to get?" She said, "Yep." Oh. And I said, "Okay, I'm not coming back then." And I didn't draw or anything for a couple of months. At which point, my wife said, "You got to get out of the house. No more video games for you." And I just came to terms that I'm not going to be drawing again. And I got my school bus driver's license.
Right.
And
any good artist would do if couldn't draw.
Yeah. Right. Hang out with my kind.
Right. It's like, oh, dang it. So it's a school bus, right, that you're driving?
Yeah.
Right. So are you shuttling, you know, high schoolers, middle schoolers, elementary kids, that kind of stuff?
Yep, the whole deal.
I hate those guys. No, I'm just kidding. I actually love that. Whenever I saw that, I was like, oh, a bus driver. Kind of like, for some reason, I always think of The Adventures of Pete and Pete from Nickelodeon. Yeah. During the, was it the early 90s? Did you guys watch that?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, man. That
Pete and Pete was great.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
What was it about?
It was about two brothers.
It was about as hipster as you could get in 1990. And both of the brothers were named Pete.
Yes.
And it was just, it's hard to describe, but it was just, they had adventures about nothing.
Right. It was Seinfeld of Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
During the day. Mm-hmm. So is that, I don't know why that just struck me as that, but okay. So, wow. So immediately when you were cut, was it like an immediate realization that, oh shit, I am so screwed? Or was it kind of like, maybe might be okay.
Well, I looked at it initially, and then I put my hand on it, and I didn't look back at it for a while. So
we're just gonna side table this for a minute.
Yeah.
We're not gonna think about it.
You're describing every artist's nightmare, right? I mean, right. I can't imagine, you know, what kind of things would just flash through your head.
Yeah, I would literally have nightmares about that. Literally had that nightmare where my hand was cut off or something.
Right. Yeah, car accident. You know, you lose a limb. I can't even imagine. So, I mean, to try to find like a silver lining in your bus driving, did any of the kids recognize you and be like, "Hey, I know you. You draw JLA."
Absolutely not. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they don't take pictures of you and put your picture in the front, you know, front side of the cover there very often. No. That does happen.
Well, you never know what kid might have been a con goer or something like that. That's
true. That's true. Yeah. That would have been awesome. That would have been the best kid. He would have been like up the front. He would have been like the front of the bus, just like fawning over you every day. When are you going to draw again? You think you can do it with your left hand? Huh? Can you? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? Shut up, kid. Yeah. That life is behind me now. But you know what? You obviously made it through somehow or another, and you were able to rehab yourself somehow, because you kind of left us at the you kind of said screw the rehab. Did what finally brought you back in? Did it just start getting better, or you're drawing your feet now? What we got?
I just said stop feeling sorry for yourself and started carrying a sketchbook with me, and you had some time before your run on the bus where you would sit and wait for your number to be called, and I would draw holding the pencil between my forefinger and middle finger.
Right.
And I started out doing that way and slowly graduated to holding it nearly normal now. Right. And that's the way it came. And I fortunately got a call from DC at one point. I think it was during the summer. And they said, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Hey, I'm driving a school bus." They're like, "What?"
"I'm driving a school bus right now. Who is this?"
Yeah. So I got some fill-in work and slowly worked my way back.
That's like the greatest success story I've ever heard in comics. True story.
So do you find that working digitally with styluses being a little bit larger? And I mean, I don't want to say that I guess we could say that the medium is a little bit more forgiving. Do you find it easier?
Yeah, for like drawing small faces and stuff, you can't beat it for zooming in and
right. Considering that you probably have to draw a lot more with like your elbow and your shoulder now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, no, it's pretty much normal. I just I have no feeling in my thumb. I can't make the small, minute pinching
right
movement so well.
Right,
but
occasionally you find an X-Acto knife sticking out your thumb. Going, huh? When I do that.
Yeah. Is there an arrow in my thumb?
Right. How did that even happen? I don't even know. Stupid JLA stuff. So, okay, do you ever get into like, so you're working in the comic industry. Has there ever been a time where you had to play the role of Martian Manhunter to the Batman, Superman comic creators out there who maybe had like a little bit of a super ego? Do you ever have to come in with your little Martian Manhunter kind of reasoning and go, "Hey guys, we're all on the same team"?
No.
I'm gonna teleport you to the moon. Never happened. All right, fine.
I have eaten as much Oreos as he's eaten.
Martian Manhunter, by the way, my favorite character.
He's awesome.
Really interesting.
Yeah, one of my favorite characters out of the JLA thing, because you know, you can say you love Superman, but he's kind of a dick sometimes. You know?
And definitely in the new movies.
I was going to say in JLA 3000, right now. Or Justice League 3000, he's not a very nice guy.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, man.
Batman's always trying to, you know, get stuff behind you so that he can equalize the power. Such a lawyer. Get out of here.
Batman the lawyer.
Lawyer comic. Nice. And get out of here.
Oh, man. So, Howard, I mean, like, you've obviously been able to touch, and by that I mean draw, some of the biggest heroes in comics. Do you have a favorite that you've drawn?
But when I was doing JLA, it was Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
I loved him. It really was.
what is it about him? Is it like the costume? Is it just like his overall posture? Is attitude? Like, what's fun about Martian Manhunter?
He's green, right?
Yeah, the green. I love the green. Yeah, it was. I love his alien form with the longer head and. Right. And he's basically Superman. He's huge.
Right.
And yeah. Let's see, what else do I like about him? I really enjoyed his morphing effect. It came up with an effect where he would like break apart and reform.
Right. Oh, cool. Right. I forget that he shapeshifts. Like, I know that he can like pass through things, but I always forget that he can shapeshift and stuff like that. Very, very cool. So who's on the bucket list then? Like, who haven't you had a chance to work on for heroes?
I've fortunately had a chance to do, I think, pretty much every DC character.
Right.
So it would have to be, geez.
Maybe some Wolverine, maybe. Yes, that's what I would.
No, I'm not too into Wolverine, not anymore. Right.
Not since that incident?
Not since, yeah. Right. Those claws and my thumb.
Right, not good.
Yeah. Not since he gave you that martini shaker.
Bastard. Yeah.
Bastard.
Damn you, Logan. Beverages. Geez. I would love to do more Fantastic Four. And some of the villains I didn't get to do, like Galactus. That's on my bucket list.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fortunately, you can draw it on your own, is, you know, to say, look at me, look what I've done.
Huh. Yeah. I drew Galactus.
Right. I drew Galactus. Second. So do you. So when you went to, so you recently went to Comic-Con, were you set up with a booth? Were you with DC, or were you on your own, or
there were no comic companies there. Were just artists sitting and stuff, so I was on my own.
Right. So what's the weirdest crap someone's asked you to draw? Is there a weird crap story that somebody's asked you to draw? Too many to tell, maybe?
Some perverted things. And I'm not going to even say.
Does it involve Superman and a Speedo?
No, I would have been happy to draw that.
Right, perfect. That's what he looks like anyway. He's already on a Speedo, Brian. He just has leotards on underneath him.
That's how I start drawing him all the time.
Right.
Just add the other parts later.
Right.
What's the weirdest thing? Yeah, I mean, there's some guys like crazy,
I'm sure,
Batgirl tied up kind of things. And
right.
Like, hey, you're a freak, leave me alone.
Right. Any My Little Pony requests while you're, you know?
No.
No? That's good.
Not yet.
Right? We'll see.
I think a My Little Pony in the new Batman costume from 3000 would be pretty badass.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you've worked in comics for so long. Even, you know, you went through the 90s, and 90s was kind of a depressing time for some of the publishers. Mm. Even though Image had come out and was doing gangbusters, I mean, Marvel was going through a lot of hard times, and now suddenly everything seems to be turned around, and people can't get enough of comics. Well, I mean, comic book sales would say otherwise. But
right.
Is this a new renaissance for comics? Have we seen? Have we reached a peak? I mean, what do you see, compare and contrast from the 90s to today, as far as demand for work and the need for more artists in the industry?
I think I just was reading an article. It might have been Forbes or something about comic sales booming,
right?
But mm-hmm. more so in the graphic novels and
mm-hmm.
and you know, with the digital delivery. So that's a huge change, is the digital delivery, I think.
Right. I'm into graphic novels myself now. I think that's probably a real reflection of our attitude right currently. I'm into graphic novels, and if I want to get my single issues, I'm fine getting them digitally. But I do like the, mm-hmm. the big collections, so I can just sit back and flip through.
Well, I've been going back and forth with one of my other hosts on one of my shows, and I'm kind of in this thought that there are some series, especially limited series, that why can't we release a series as just one volume? You know, why can't we just collect, or two volumes, collect six issues at a time, skip the single issue and go right to a trade or a graphic novel format, kind of like what they do in Japan.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would work.
And in Europe, too, where they have the big books.
I mean, I'd be happy with that. Waiting 6 months, get JLA or Justice League 3000 twice a year in one big chunky volume. I'd love that because you get to devour it all at once. I mean, Netflix does it with their shows. Right.
That's a good comparison, Stephen, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way I watch TV shows, actually. I wait till the season's over, and I can just sit and watch it all at once, almost. Right.
Binge reading and that kind of thing. And, you know, I think it's probably more common. I remember when I was a kid, and the comics I was getting from the 70s were very dialogue heavy. You know, it was very blocky. Everything was in little neat little squares. There wasn't a lot of dynamic. Marvel hadn't come along and made the whole drawing the Marvel way yet. So, you know, there was a true sense of, okay, this is going to take me at least a good 20 minutes to read, flipping through. Whereas now it feels like you've got all these great big illustrations, but the dialogue sometimes can be kind of light, and you can go flip, 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 I'm done.
Crap. Yeah, they've really decompressed the storytelling.
Right, right. So, I think bigger is better in this case, and I'm willing to pay that as well. Did you guys crap as being comic lovers from the 80s and 90s? I know we're maybe a little bit old on this show right now, but whatever. did you guys like feel like there was a while where it just seemed like comic books weren't just jumping in you know nickel and dime increments; they were jumping like in dollars.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, $3 for a comic?
Yeah, I used to get my comics at a flea market because there would be no tax.
Right.
And the guys that were selling them would usually be able to sell you like, you know, there'd be like, you know, five for 10 bucks or something like that. And if you were looking to pick up like a series or something like that, like I was really into Image stuff. So I was reading like Cyber Force and Strike Force and Stormwatch and all that kind of stuff. And I was a little bit late getting to it. So there was all these issues that I was missing. And I used to have to go to the flea markets to get them, mainly because that's where people would bring out their boxes.
Right.
And it was easier to get the back issues that way. But I did find it cheaper because when I went to the stores, at the time I would have been 14, 16. Right. And it was just on your part-time income at the drugstore. It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're terribly expensive now.
Well, and there's talk that they may go up another buck by next year.
Wow. Yeah.
So I do like what they do. There's a lot of competition for your dollar out there for entertainment. How much entertainment can you get for a dollar? Well, the App Store and the phones, man, you can pick up a lot of entertainment for a dollar.
Well, but here's one of the cool things, kind of to put Howard back in the spotlight here, is that where else can you go every month and get original art,
right,
that is not copy-pasted, it's not the same, you know, stuff that you see on TV, every transition and wipe. I mean, every month you pick up an issue and there is a new story and new art, and it's not what you're getting in your DLC downloads from your video games. So it's almost a very unique situation in that the artist and the writer are creating something new each time, and instead of just the $50 video game that you play in 3 weeks and you're done with.
Right, right. Plus the unique stories. I mean, you get so much. It seems like there's so much the same on TV, whereas I feel like there's a great diversity in comics. Food for thought.
Compare it to the amount of people that are out there supporting their favorite creators on Patreon for, you know, $3, $5 a month. You know, it's very similar in pricing in terms of picking up your favorite comic, you know, month to month. Something that I noticed when I was picking up Justice League 3000 was that the new issues are full price, but the issue number one is only $1.
Yeah.
Issue 2, 3, and I think issue 4 were only $2. And it wasn't until you get into the newer ones that they were up to the full price. So it made for a very easy entry. You know, when everybody's used to spending $1 on an app or $2 on an app, it was a no-brainer to just, you know, pick up comics for under $3 is a no-brainer for me. Where do you guys fall on digital comics as far as, you know, pricing? Like, do you find that you tip? Do you have to make it, you know, do you find that there's just a price that is a sweet spot for you?
Oddly enough, for me, when it comes to digital comics, it's just what I'm interested in. I think I'm in a range that my income is high enough that I don't have to really worry about, you know, the $3 comics. you know, or the digital comics. I don't mind either.
I'm just it's that app mentality, right? That kind of trickles over.
Yeah, for me it was that app mentality of, oh, you know, an in-app purchase, it's very easy to just buy the next issue. But of course, Comixology and Amazon took that away. Mm-hmm. So I've got some issues, of course, running a website all about comic books. You do want to try to keep up on stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that I do pay full price, but I love Comixology's 99 cent Monday sale where put up all sorts of stuff for 99 cents. Or, you know, what you were talking about, Joel, was the... I think it's 2 months after they drop the price by a buck, and then another 2 months they drop it again. So if you're willing to wait, you can get your comics relatively cheap.
Right. Mm. You know what? I feel kind of dirty talking money while Howard's here.
I'm just wringing my hands listening. Right.
Money. No,
not bring it to me.
Right.
Well, so let me ask you this, because this is a money question. Do you, and maybe you can just generalize it by comic book artists in general, are you getting a flat rate per page, or do you get any kind of a residual for when it goes into trade or anything like that?
Yeah, I get the flat rate per page for pencil and ink rate. And then you do get, there's a new royalty system, and I don't know how it's going to work out, but it looks good. I get a percentage of... I guess the profits. So,
right.
If it sells a certain amount, I'll make something. And that probably won't happen, but.
So I like that idea. That's good. So you get to kind of reinvest into your own, you know, your own work. That's good.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, absolutely. And residual income is the bee's knees for, you know, any independent artists out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you said, Howard, that's new. How new is the whole residual thing?
The residual thing's been around for quite a while, but there's a new structure to it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, now it's based on, I always get net and gross mixed up, but whatever they make the profits after their expenses.
Net.
So that's only, percentage to that.
I think that was only announced like April, May, somewhere around there. It's been only a couple of months.
Mm. Yeah, it just went into effect. I just started getting the vouchers. It just went into effect in July.
Ooh, cool. Vouchers. I love vouchers.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you're not out on the street protesting like the fast food workers are right now. Poor guys, I hate that for them. A little bit of minimum wage raise, please.
Yeah.
So they ask for. I'm willing to pay $5 for a burger. Wait a minute, I already paid $5 for a burger.
No. I'm not out on the street at any point because I'm too afraid to leave my room.
That's how they're going to win. The artists can't leave their houses,
yep.
So we certainly can't protest. Stupid DC and Marvel. To the internets. Yeah. So, all right. So, you know, we're in a totally different world now. Are you looking to doing any self-publishing in the future, or are you still just having so much fun working inside the industry that who would do that? Who would even worry about self-publishing crap?
I would love to do it. Right now, I have a contract with DC, an exclusive, so I can't do that.
Right.
And fortunately, they're keeping me busy, but...
Just change your name like Prince did that time. Remember that?
Into a symbol.
Right. Yeah.
What would my symbol be?
An inch ink splot, you know? Like spill some ink and make that your legal name.
I would love to do that, though, and write something myself.
Right. Now, I'm looking at your website, howardporter.net. We're getting on to the end of the show here. We've got a few more minutes, but just want to remind you guys to go to howardporter.net, check out his website. He does have some JLA 3000 on there for you to look at for free, no dialogue. If you want the dialogue, you will have to purchase the comic, which I suggest.
Or you could put it in yourself.
True, you can make your own dialogue. That's actually kind of fun. That's not a bad idea. I think I'll do that, actually. No, I'm going to go buy it. I'm going to take your words. I'm going to take your words for it. Also, you can visit Howard Porter on Twitter. Where's the best place for guys and gals to visit you on the internet, Howard?
I'm not so good with keeping up with the Twitter.
Right.
But Facebook, I'm fairly good with. I'm on the Facebook.
He's on the Facebook. Totally can do that. Howard, do you have anything upcoming that you can tell us about that we might not know? Like any new projects, any new plans? Anything
no.
that exciting?
More of the JLA, but I do have, I don't know if you've seen these Gatorade bottles that have football players on them.
Right.
Yeah, I did those.
Get
So those are out there somewhere.
Yeah, that's football season just started recently. And so you've got some. I'm going to look up Gatorade and Howard Porter to see if I can find any great images for that. Oh, Christos, is that how you say that? Oh, bleeding
Gage,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a little. Oh, yeah, I did see that. I love these. Oh, he did a Cam Newton. I'm from the Carolinas.
Yeah, there you go.
I like that. Did you do the Cam Newton?
I did Cam Newton. Yeah, we did. I think there's 5 or 6 different bottles that we did with Cam Newton, Peyton Manning,
right.
And stuff. Nice. And Dayanan made them put voices to it for some TV commercials.
That's
fun.
Awesome. Hey, Steven Slyker. If I grab one of these Cam Newton Gatorade bottles, will I lose value on the bottle if I drink the juice out of it? Is that what happens?
Yeah, see, it doesn't quite work that way.
Oh, son of a... All right, well, you can visit Steven Slyker at Major Spoilers. Is that the place to go?
Majorspoilers.com, that's the place.
We love that stuff, man. Where can they follow you on Twitter?
At Major Spoilers.
Sweet. Steven, thank you for being on the show, brother.
Hey, thank you, guys. It was fun.
You're so much fun. I love you.
I love you guys, too.
You should come back on some more. Joel Duggan of StarCrossed Online. Joel, where's the best place to visit you?
StarCrossOnline.com. My Twitter is Joel Duggan, and so is my Patreon page. And I just posted my first draw over. I had an artist in Australia ask me to go over some of his work, so I just posted that the other day.
Oh, sweet. That's where you kind of say you draw it, and I look at it, and I tell you suck. Is that...
Well, no. I constructive I did, criticism.
I didn't sell that well. Okay, you sell a little better than that.
Thank you.
Constructive criticism by Joel Duggan. I like it. Also, you can visit me at The Brian Dunaway on Twitter, and you can visit my website at briandunaway.com. Everything we do is at comicscoasttocoast.com, the extremely long URL for comics fun. Also, follow us on Comics C2C, and we're on the Frog Pants Network. We love this place, and we've had a great year this year. It's been a lot of fun. We've interviewed a lot of great cartoonists, and I'm so glad that Howard came on the show. Howard, thank you one more time.
Thank you.
You were fantastic. Thanks. And it was so great to meet you at Nerdtacular. And that's one of the things that we get to have when you're part of a great network like the Frog Pants Network. It allows you to make all these great connections. All right. No, go ahead, Howard.
I was going to say how great Nerdtacular was. It was just such, everyone was so nice.
In a nice place. Such a nice place. You people should come next year if you didn't come this past year. And that's it. So we'll see you guys next week.
Burn it.